Good morning and welcome to a very special edition of Perspectives on WFSU-FM and also our friends on 4FSU. I'm Tom Flanagan and you are always welcome to be part of the conversation regardless of what the topic happens to be. 414-1234 is our local number. Actually, 850 area code prefixes that, if you will. And if you got an old-fashioned landline and you're dialing in long distance, who does that anymore? 800-926-8809 is that number. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. An untold number of people who grew up in Tallahassee or maybe came here to go to school leave the community typically to seek their fortune in the big city, somewhere far away with more opportunity and all that kind of thing. But a surprising number of these same people wind up returning to Tallahassee years later when it's time to raise their own families. And it would seem the town already has a pretty solid reputation as a family-friendly place, but there is always room for improvement. Now, in advance of next month's Family First Week, which is going to be the week of May 7th, and the Children's Summit on May 10th, we are going to talk about what's being done and what's yet to be done when it comes to making our community the very best and most supportive environment possible for families. And we have a fantastic panel to talk about that. From the city of Tallahassee, the chief of staff for Mayor Andrew Gillum, Dustin Daniels. Good to see you, Dustin.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Hey, from the private sector, the president of Al Stern Marketing Communications, Tom Derzapolsky. Hey, Tom.
Good morning. Thanks.
And from Poppin, parents of the Panhandle Information Network, the organization's, I think, cultural outreach coordinator. Is that the current title, Luciana?
Multicultural.
Multicultural. There we go. I want to put in the multi there just to make sure that we are accurate in our pronouncements. And this is Luciana Brown. And good to see you, Luciana.
Hi.
Let's get started on how this entire Family Week situation came about here, Dustin Daniels. You want to give us some historical background there?
I absolutely love to. And again, Tom, thanks so much for having us. I think this conversation really began when Mayor Gillum took office in 2014. At that time, he really had an ambition to lift up this conversation that we were having locally by some organizations like Whole Child Leon and the Early Learning Coalition about what we as a community were doing to invest more deeply and more intentionally in issues that affect children and families. Most specifically, I think, the issue of early childhood development, right? We at that time were sort of getting questions about why we as local government officials, public servants, cared so much about the issue of early childhood education. And it was because of the research and the statistics that show us how impactful the early years of a child's life are to their life trajectory, right? The 90% of a child's brain is developed before the age of 3. If folks do not have the critical brain development that takes place in those early years, then those folks start behind and oftentimes do not catch back up with their peers in the public school system and so on and so forth. And so we, are, as a local government, deal with those issues on the back end, as it relates to incarceration rates, poor health outcomes, so on and so forth. And so under the mayor's leadership and with our staff, we launched the first Mayor's Summit on Children in 2015 that essentially brought together diverse cross-sections of our community from the private, nonprofit, public sector to basically just talk about not only what we are doing, what the issues are that we're experiencing here locally, but what are some of the examples of other communities that are getting it right, right? And that manifested into a work of its own for the last several years, everything from developing a quality rating and improvement system to improve early childhood education to looking at alternative financing mechanisms to invest in interventions that affect children, things like a Children's Services Council or Pay for Success. And then obviously, one of the other really, really robust ways that we've leaned into this work has been working with the employer side, the private sector, business community, to basically talk with them about how it is that we can influence the culture and the policies that they use that allow their employees to prioritize investments in children and families as well through family-friendly work policies. And so again, you know, we're in our fourth year. We're actually coming up on our fourth Family First Week, as you mentioned, and our fourth Children's Summit. So really excited to see all of the momentum and velocity that we've gained over the years, and excited to continue to try to lift up this issue as one that is extremely important for the future of Tallahassee.
And since we are this far out from not only the week, but also the summit event there, people can still find out more. They can register to attend. All that is still viable, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They can find more information on our Facebook page, the Office of the Mayor of Tallahassee, Florida. They can also go to talgov.com. All that information is available.
Okay. Well, great segue that you set up there, Dustin, going into the private sector and Tom Derzepolsky, because you have some metrics, some survey info that you have been dealing with on this issue too, right?
Yeah. I've had the pleasure of working with this task force, with the support of the mayor's office for the past couple of years. And year one, we brought together a bunch of community leaders. We wanted to ensure we had representation from all sorts of walks of life, all sorts of businesses. So we had major state agencies present, hospitality, you know, the small hamburger shop or our local brewery participated. And then, you know, big and medium-sized businesses all throughout Tallahassee. And what we wanted to discuss was the role of business and family in balancing those, and how do we create an environment that helps support healthy families in Tallahassee. And we did extensive research in that first year and examined best practices around the country, best practices from within our own community, and developed a survey instrument that businesses could take to kind of measure and see how they're doing.
What are some of the top line things from that survey, Tom?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think one of the good news pieces we found was Tallahassee businesses are doing a great job. I mean, we are a family-friendly community. If you look at our parks and recs and schools and quality of life here, we're delivering on that. And then as we peeled back the onion and looked within different industry sectors, we found businesses that truly care about their people, their workforce, and their families. And, you know, we kind of used the, excuse me, the legal standard as the very basement bottom line level you can reach, you know, things you're supposed to do when you're operating a good business. And then we layered on different levels of opportunity that businesses make for families. And that's all the way from, you know, flexible scheduling, paid time off, paid sick leave, things of that nature. One of the most, you know, fascinating things I discovered was, you know, Dustin's talking about, you know, kids showing up ready to learn. So those early childhood initiatives are so important. Well, as an employer myself, I need employees that are going to show up every day ready to work. You know, that any business, your people in that business are what make you great. And so you need people that are able to show up and focus and apply themselves to the task at hand and not be, you know, concerned about things that are happening on the home front. So practices that will allow them the flexibility to manage their home life, take care of their children, and take care of those types of activities allows them to show up and be more productive and find fulfillment in their job. And it's important. I'm sure we won't skip this throughout the day, but we're going to talk about kids. But with our aging population, many people are going to be taking care of their parents. So family-friendly environments doesn't have to do with lactation rooms or being able to go read your children's class or go on a field trip. Those certainly. But when we start looking at our population and how we are aging as a community, the likelihood of you having a parent or two live with you or, you know, need your daily care is very much a part of our future, and it's going to impact the way we do business here in Tallahassee.
Yeah, not just getting the kid to soccer practice. It's getting mom to her doctor's appointment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Luciana, talk a little bit about, and number one, the Parents of the Panhandle Information Network and what exactly that organization is.
Well, basically, that's just one of the programs that is affiliated with Family Network on Disabilities. And so I work for POPIN, which covers the north region of Florida. I cover from Alachua County all the way to Pensacola. Yes, that is how far I am. And so when he was talking about the flexibility, that's one thing I like about FND, which is Family Network on Disabilities, because we do a lot of workshops, we do a lot of resource fairs. I'm almost everywhere. You know, anytime something is going on in Tallahassee as well as our surrounding counties, I'm there just grabbing those resources to make sure I can bring back to the parents. And so what we do is help families advocate for their children that have special needs. And so that is our focus, but a lot of times when parents call me, I always ask, is there anything else that you need service for? And because I have resources from my own personal life as well as being at these other events, I give those resources to those parents as well. And so just being able to be flexible, like he just said, being able to take care of my 7-year-old son, my mother, you know, I take her to the doctor. F&D has been a blessing to me all the way around, because when I came back here to Florida 4 years ago, that's the type of job I wanted, something flexible, something that I could still give back, something that I could still help with my family as well as my neighborhood. So that's what we do. We advocate for families.
But that kind of turns the old saw on its head. Now, you leave those personal problems at home. You don't bring those to the workplace. You're here now. You're supposed to be doing what you're supposed to be doing. But mm-hmm. as Tom mentioned, Dustin, this is something that we're seeing now in a much greater range of responses when it comes to the what we do as families and who's involved there. But I can almost hear some folks saying, well, yeah, but I mean, business is cutthroat. It is competitive. I got to have my people here when it's mm-hmm. time to work and all that. And I just can't make accommodation. It can't be done.
Absolutely. No, it's totally true. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of these issues kind of start that way, right? They seem almost sort of, you know, tugging at your heartstrings kind of issues. And I'm not going to say that isn't necessarily the case, because I think that is present, right? There is a social justice mission in some of the things that we're talking about. Absolutely. But I think what a lot of business owners and a lot of employers in general come to find in being involved with this initiative is that we actually are talking about your bottom line here, because an employee that feels supported, that is able to invest in their children and families, to take care of their issues, those are employees that show up ready. They're employees that are more productive. They're employees that have less turnover, right? They're employees that are more loyal, right, over time. And so there's actual studies that we have looked at, as Tom mentioned before, when we were putting this initiative together, that really shows that actually this isn't just a heartstring issue. It really is a bottom line issue. When you have employees that benefit from these kinds of policies and practices and culture, ultimately it's going to improve the competitiveness of your business, right? And if you think about it from a standpoint of retaining talent, which we oftentimes talk about, this local community, you want the best talent you possibly can for the benefit of your business or your organization. And one way that you potentially retain or attract that talent is to have the best policies that allow for, again, your family to feel supported. It makes you feel like you are valued as an employee of that organization. And that's – so we're really trying to match folks, you know, making sure that they understand that that's a real fact.
Tallahassee's Family Week and the Family Summit coming up in May, and we're doing a bit of a preview on this special edition of Perspectives here on WFSU-FM. And also for FSU, you are always welcome to be part of the conversation at area 850-414-1234, or drop us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. Family-friendly version of Perspectives here today at 850-414-1234, the local number. A reminder, you can always find the program online at WFSU.org. You wake up at 3 a.m. and say, gosh, I wish I had heard this week's Perspectives. Well, we make it so easy for you. Just go to WFSU.org, click on Radio, pull down the Programs menu, and then Perspectives will be amongst the selections that you see. And you can click on that. We archive past shows, try to have the most current one up for you, usually within 24 hours of when it actually appears on the air. And if you're just joining us, our family-friendly conversation involves Chief of Staff for Mayor Andrew Gillum, Dustin Daniels, also Bal Stern, Marketing Communications President Tom Dersipolsky, and from the Parents of the Panhandle Information Network and a multitude of other organizations, Luciana Brown. And Luciana, let's talk about your situation there, a child with special needs that you have, and what did you find when you were kind of bumping up against the reality of the workplace there?
Well, like I said, when I first moved here, being that I was at the time a fresh cancer survivor, I was nervous about coming back to Tallahassee because I was leaving my doctor. My dad had just passed a year ago. And so I was looking for something flexible that I could still balance. And, you know, like I said, when I got in touch with Family and Network on Disabilities, I don't even know how to get my resume, but it was just so convenient that when I got ready to go to training, they said, hey, if we can't support you in what we stand for, then why should we hire you? And so one thing I found out is being here was not just a blessing, but it allowed for me to maneuver and get more resources for my daughter that has special needs. And so being able to be not only a representative from a parent standpoint, but also represent from an employee standpoint has helped me be that advocate that can show compassion to the other parents that are dealing with some of the same issues that I've dealt with.
And did it actually improve the relationship that you had with your employer?
Of course. I'm working every weekend this month. And who's going to give up their Saturdays? But I love what I do. I love sharing resources. I love giving those things that I wish I could have found when I was a young single parent here in Tallahassee with three kids at 18. So I go hard for my job because I want to see a difference in my community, not just my family, because I understand that healthy families bring healthy neighborhoods and healthy neighborhoods bring healthy cities and states. So what I do is not just for me, it's for my city.
Tom Derzepolsky, you have a hard-charging, highly visible and driven group out there at Bal Stern. What are some of the best practices that you put in place to try to keep that crew not only working hard, but also loyal to the corporation and doing their best for you?
Well, we just make our position known from right when they're hired. So during their first day at the office, I meet with them and I share with them my personal priorities in life, which include above work, my family. And then I think it's helpful for them to see their leaders exercising that liberty. So if you say to someone, you can do these things, and then when they go to do them, there's a roll of the eyes or kind of a nod like, all right, you're going to read to your kids' class again. Let's keep an eye on that, you know. Mm-hmm. Then that doesn't work, right? You have policies on paper, but we put them into practice. So they will see me leave promptly at 5 o'clock to go be with my kids. They'll see me leave to go read. And then when they ask that question, we just, with great enthusiasm, make sure that our director-level staff has authority to approve that and to encourage that activity. And so, to me, I think it's about leadership kind of setting the example so that the workforce below them feels very comfortable if they want to work from home with a sick child or they need to go to a doctor's appointment with a spouse or a parent. And so, to me, I think it's those kind of demonstrations of that policy that make the biggest impact, not just having it in a binder.
Yeah, this isn't just a behavioral shift. This is a cultural shift because in this country, especially coming off of World War II, the totally dedicated employee who's there at 6 a.m. and stays until 8:30, 9 o'clock at night and working on weekends and sacrificing everything, right, including his or her family, for the benefit of the company. That's what we aspired to as Americans. That's what made this the, you know, epitome of capitalist accomplishment. And you're saying, no, you got to ramp it back. You got to have a more balanced approach to life.
Exactly.
Well, I didn't realize this when we implemented some of these policies. And to be honest, they were behaviors. I didn't see them as policies. We didn't have an HR manual that we put these in. We just thought about the way we wanted to treat people. And I had no idea that it would have an impact on retention, recruitment, and productivity. I didn't study this, you know, that we were practicing it. And then these things revealed themselves. So one of the neat things about the initiative is a mentorship program where we're talking to other businesses. So people in my industry of marketing, advertising, consulting, I'm able to meet with those business owners and talk to them about the real tangible benefits that they'll receive. And that's why we wanted such a diverse group of people helping put the program together. So one restaurant owner could talk to another who says, you know, I have shift work employees. How in the world could I ever do any of this? We'll show you. And I think that's what's pretty cool about it.
Okay, but that works, Dustin Daniels, really good when you have locally owned and operated businesses like Tom's. But what about some of the out-of-town folks where you have a central HR policy mechanism in Sausalito, California, and everybody does the same thing the same way? How do you say, hey, Tallahassee's a little bit different. You guys are going to have to adjust your policies in keeping with what we're trying to do as a community.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's definitely a huge challenge and it's an ongoing conversation. I mean, I think for us, Ultimately, what we've attempted to do, as Tom has mentioned, is really diversify the number of folks who are at the table, and not just sort of in a token way to make sure, oh, you represent a large Fortune 500 company, but in a way that that says we are genuinely interested in having you a part of this initiative and giving feedback on how this kind of initiative can best be applied in your organization, your place of business. And so I think that it's just a matter of building relationships with decision makers locally, right, who can start to, you know, bring these things up in meetings with the higher ups. And you'd be surprised as well about how much sort of flexibility and freedom that those folks actually have locally. I mean, we actually had worked with a couple of our large organizations, but we also worked with local schools too, elementary schools, a couple of high schools. And what we found, interestingly enough, is that those folks, though they work for Leon County Schools, have different policies and they're applied in different ways. And they actually, you know, the principals of those schools have a little bit more leeway than you would think about what essentially is going to be prioritized for the teachers and the staff of that school. I think the same thing is true for a number of the employers that exist locally, and we wouldn't know that but for engaging them meaningfully in the process of, you know, taking the survey and learning more about the initiative.
And Tom, along those lines, if we're working with a major corporate entity out of state, we try to, you know, we'll take some of the heart out of it and talk, you know, a little more business and numbers to them. But it's just a kind of like if you had the same position in California and the same position in Tallahassee, the salary base for that position may be different. Mm-hmm. Because it has to be commensurate with the environment that it's working in. So to be competitive in Tallahassee and tap into our incredible workforce, you need to be prepared to operate in you know, your business a certain way. And you start talking like that and they understand it, you know.
Okay. And given also the competitive nature of today's workforces, because we are at a level of what? Less than 4%. Unemployment rate here, and people are hustling to try to find good people, and you better be competitive.
Yes. I mean, and workers, the workforce knows that. And so when you are interviewing them, you better recognize that they're interviewing you. They're going to ask about these types of policies, and they're not afraid to. I'll tell you that when we have people come to Bow Stern as an example, and when I meet with other businesses, they ask about flexible work schedule. They ask about working remotely. They ask about sick leave and paternity leave and maternity leave and all these types of issues right up front because they're interviewing you, you know. Mm-hmm. They're the commodity. So I think that's a big shift that is good for business.
Here are the terms under which I shall be employed.
Yeah, exactly.
Never used to be able to say that and get away with it, I'll tell you. Luciana Brown, Dustin brought up a good point here about education, though. And given the critical nature of that 0 to 3 mm-hmm. category here, what can employers and we as a community do to encourage more parents to make sure that our littlest kids get that jump on life?
Well, he said something very, very profound that I liked. And one thing I was able to do this time, my son is 16 years apart from my youngest child. He's 7 and she's 23. And so one thing I did is while I was carrying him is I read to him. When he said he leaves to go read to the classroom, I think that is so important. I mean, just encouraging that reading, having something at the job that reminds parents how much it is important to read to your child. I can't stress that enough because the vocabulary that he has now is outstanding. And it brings so much confidence. And it not only helps that child, it helps that parent. Because I run into so many parents that maybe don't have a high school education or want to go to college, but may feel like they're not ready to. So I think if jobs can incorporate some kind of initiative on encouraging reading from birth to 5, I think that would be great. We have so many other resources out there like ELC that gives away books, you know, even having resources where they can get free books. I found out here that you can even go and the kids can get a free library card. And I bet you all my grandkids and my son has one. And so just having that, I think, would be a great asset, as well as encourage, maybe have some kind of incentive if they go to the school and volunteer and read to the classroom. you know, their child. Children are excited when their parents show up to school, but a lot of times parents can't go because their schedule don't permit it. And I just had the chance Friday to attend my son's end of the year field trip in St. Augustine, and we only had five parents. You know, it was K through second. But for our class, we only had, I think, five parents. And so I'm pretty sure there were various reasons why some parents couldn't attend. But for me, that was very important. And so to be able to show up, to be able to be involved, to encourage that reading, I mean, especially by third grade, is very, very important for our society in Tallahassee. So I think that would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay, terrific. Dustin Daniels, we have the summit coming up on May 10th. Mm-hmm. So even though it's been around since 2015, for the benefit of those folks who have never attended one, what is that like and what are the expectations of those folks who show up for that?
Absolutely. So we have changed it, the curricula or the structure of the event over time. But ultimately, what we are attempting to do is really just continue to grow the tent of individuals in our community who understand and recognize the importance of these issues, right? And so we bring in speakers from sometimes around the country, speakers who are impressive sort of advocates or academics in their own right here from our community to basically come and talk about these issues. What does the latest research say about the effect of early childhood education on incarceration rates 30 years down the line? What is the sort of relationship between implicit bias of teachers and the achievement gap that students are seeing across the country? So what folks can expect this year is we've adopted more of a sort of a smaller bite size kind of session mentality, where we'll have almost like TED Talk style talks from 8 to 10 different individuals from around the, again, Florida and our community, basically talking about these issues and the intersection of these issues, right? I mean, when you talk about children and family issues and early childhood education, that's only one of the issues, right? When we're talking about trauma-informed care as it relates to human trafficking and child trafficking, which is an issue that, believe it or not, families in Tallahassee do experience. So really is just an exposure to these issues from experts who work in the field. And then at the very end of it, at the end of the summit, always we have a call to action where we ask folks, if you've been compelled by anything that's been said today, that we are basically chartering task forces of community leaders that we're going to basically work on these issues for the next year. And if you're interested in that, give us your name and we'll follow up with you. And we've done that every single year. And that's the reason why we have incredible leaders like Tom Dierzopolsky who have leaned in on this issue in such a big way.
Yeah, and Tom Dierzopolsky, I'll throw that to you. What kind of metrics do you use to find out how moving forward each of these summits not only builds Sure. upon the one before, but is pushing that ball down the field?
Right. So to us, it's twofold. One, we look at how many people participate in the survey completely, and also how many people visit that content and learn more about it. So by taking the survey, you'll kind of expose yourself to some new benefits for families that you might be able to implement. So internally, we talk about the possibility of certifying a workplace and saying you are a family-friendly employer, and they get the sticker for their door and get that recognition. But on the outside of that, we have a goal of this mentorship, meeting with businesses, business to business, and sharing ideas and talking about these practices. So each year we look at how we, grow that number. Last year we had 91 businesses participate in the survey, and over 50 of them actually qualified. They met a threshold of being able to be recognized as being family friendly. And so we're looking to double that this year. But what I'm looking at behind the scenes really is how many businesses are mentored? How many inquiries do we have? Are we continuing this important conversation in Tallahassee and piquing the interest of industry and moving Tallahassee forward? I want people to think of Tallahassee as a great place to live for many reasons. And when you look at the workforce here, I want that to be part of our story, the way we treat our families, the way we handle, from cradle to grave, whether we're taking care of our children or our parents. That Tallahassee is the type of place that truly cares about families.
Yeah, and on top of all of the positives, however, there is a little undercurrent that we're starting to hear more and more frequently nowadays, especially since we're seeing a lot of development right now, which is a community that is rapidly becoming a more expensive place to live, mm-hmm. meaning more families are going to have to have more jobs, like maybe two or even three, in order to afford the ever-growing cost of living here. And that, Lucy, you're seeing that, right?
I'm laughing because we are actually renting, and we pay $900. All our grown kids are out the home, and now we're looking to downsize. And so one of the things, I'm actually mostly looking, my husband works a lot, so, and I'm like, wow, it's challenging, you know, even downsizing to the house that we're in now so we can buy a house. But it's just like the, depending on where you live, where you want to live, the size, the location would determine whether or not you want to live in a high crime rating area, or if you don't, you're paying more. So it's like, really, what you're saying is true, trying to make sure you have that balance between, okay, you want to stay in a safe environment, but at the same time, you don't want to pay the same amount that you're moving out of. So it is a challenge, and with so many apartments coming up, but you don't want to stay in a student housing. So it's like, it's a lot of choices, but at the same time, like you said, the expense is rising.
Yeah, and Dustin Daniels, you're at the mayor's office. You guys talk about this stuff. What can be done, if anything?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the good news is that we are not experiencing these issues for the first time. They're every community, every city who has grown up essentially has dealt with these issues. And I think that there's a great opportunity in looking at what those essentially mistakes that those communities have made, and maybe even some of the sort of practices that they use that actually show to be successful. You know, I think, you know, for the first time in a while, the conversation locally around what affordable housing, actual strategy around affordable housing, what that looks like. You know, for everything from the lower end to the higher end, not just student housing, but also workforce housing and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
so,
hold that thought. We'll continue that topic on the other side of the break, rapidly bearing down on us. 850-414-1234, our number for Perspectives, talking about the upcoming Children's Summit and Children's Week here in Tallahassee, how to make the capital city a more family-friendly environment for everyone. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back. Back on our special family-friendly version of Perspectives on WFSU-FM and also for FSU. Thank you for tuning in and watching us. Radio shows are always so much fun to look at, I know. Look, people sitting around a table. That's riveting. But we have from the city of Tallahassee, Dustin Daniels, and from Bowstern Marketing, Tom Derzapolsky, and from Parents of the Panhandle Information Network, Luciana Brown. We went into the break talking about affordable housing, but as from the private sector, I mean, you can't go to a developer, Tom, and say, you know, well, you're charging $2,500 a month. You've got to get that down to $1,500.
Yeah.
You can't do that. So how do we wrestle with this thing?
Yeah, the private sector doesn't react well to that kind of stuff. Yeah. But you know what I think is, just like these family-friendly policies, we make decisions in the private sector from a competitive perspective. How do we move our business forward? And so whenever you see pressures come into a marketplace, the increased volume of housing in a community reduces that amount of increases that amount of inventory that's available. And then all of a sudden, price becomes competitive. So I think you see over time these things will iron themselves out. But unfortunately, I do think Tallahassee is in desperate need of some real affordable housing opportunities. And as much of a blessing as our universities are, I think that places some unique challenges on Tallahassee because of the population of people that move here throughout the year. And you know, those of us that are here all year trying to raise families face those same price challenges that are kind of set by that student market.
Yeah. And Luciana, what would you like to see, though, as a parent, a grandparent, now downsizing and you're looking for something that is going to be affordable but still nice at the same time?
Kind of what he said, just something affordable. I was just sitting here thinking, my mother stays in a neighborhood over near Bellevue, and it was a lot of families there, a lot of the families have moved out, and now they're renting to students, and they're like $1,500 for rent. And so when you think, you take the single mother or the single father, and they're looking for something affordable but not necessarily in government housing, I would see just a little bit more balance across the board, you know, and maybe some limit, some limit set, you know?
Dustin, from an incentives kind of thing, we're not necessarily talking tax abatement or those weird kind of programs, sure, but can local government be a partner in encouraging the market in certain directions without being too heavy-handed?
I think so. And I mean, I think that we've seen examples around the country where that has been the case, where you can use development incentives in a way that, you know, just basically, like you're saying, helps along the private sector that says, hey, listen, for us as a community, mixed income housing is a huge priority. We'd love it if you worked with us on that, right? Be a good partner, right? And I think that's definitely possible. I also think, you know, we're having conversations locally about land trusts and other kinds of opportunities where, you know, in areas where there's a lot of development that's happening quickly, for instance, like on South Monroe on the south side. Mm-hmm. One of the huge concerns for me, obviously, is gentrification, making sure that property owners basically don't get pushed out of their homes on that side of town simply because all of this development has happened overnight, right? I think we need to think just creatively about how we make sure that that doesn't happen. And I'll tell you something else. It's always interesting to me because we're obviously talking about residential housing, but for me, also local businesses, I think, deal with this issue, right? In the same way that a business from outside of this community can come to, for instance, the Office of Economic Vitality and ask to see what does the market look like for what we're trying to do? What is the housing market projected to do in the next couple of years? I think that we need to make sure that we're providing those same kinds of insights to local businesses, right? Because right now, if you are a developer from out of town and you went to somebody on South Monroe and said, hey, I'll give you this much money for your, you know, for the land that you own, you may not know what's coming. You may not know that actually, you know, if I sit on it or if I want to, you know, the options that I have to actually develop my business even further and take take advantage of this wave that's coming. So I think that it's definitely incumbent upon local leaders to make sure that we're rising to the challenge of these issues. But again, the good news, I think, for me is that these are not adaptive problems, right? In terms of we don't know necessarily what the solution is. They're technical problems. We have seen what works in other places. We just got to figure out what the right mix is for us to make sure that those problems don't manifest themselves as well.
And that was part of that survey thing you were talking about, Tom, where you're constantly tapping the pulse, if you will, sure, of the private sector and say, okay, guys, kind of where are we going and how do we get there?
Yeah, I mean, the dialogue between the private sector and government needs to be healthy. It needs to be frequent. It shouldn't be one asking the other for permission to do something as much as it is, as Dustin suggested, a collaboration. You know, how can we develop in a way? How can we implement policies and bring products to the marketplace that are beneficial for the community and also allow that business owner to make money? I mean, they are putting their life savings and their efforts into a business with their own dreams and aspirations. So we don't want to get in the way of that. But how do we perhaps show them a way to do it that will enhance it, make it more successful, make it more profitable not only for them but for Tallahassee as a whole, the community that they sit in? And that kind of collaboration dialogue, I think, more than ever in Tallahassee is beginning to occur. We have the opportunity to work with many developers and private businesses, and the old adage of, you know, quote, City Hall being in the way, I think that those tides are turning. We're seeing very healthy dialogues. We're seeing very productive development, thoughtful development. We're seeing the passions of many sides at a table, sharing ideas, talking about how to manage projects. And that is – those kind of conversations are what is going to position Tallahassee for the next 10 and 20 years to remain strong.
We have a comment that came in from Facebook Live, which is also what we're doing here. We are just – multimedia like crazy today. Morgan McRoberts Evers says, provider to provider, and a nice little wink emoji there, how frontline staff can participate to be better equipped to serve our local families, and y'all are doing great. Mm-hmm. So there.
Fantastic.
But that is
Thank
something.
Thank you, Morgan.
On hourly kinds of things, when you are like you, Tom, mm-hmm. You know, hey, high-powered executive there and say, hey, I'm out of here at 5, and the rest of the guys go, okay, we're right behind you, Chief.
Right.
But if you are in an hourly situation, I am personally aware of a number of organizations that again, do not grant the type of flexibility that employees really need to be more family focused. Because
sure.
this is the way it is. And if you don't like it, there's 15 more people who are ready to take your position out there. And how does the average person deal with that? You can't just go to the mayor's office or, hey, I'm going to go to Bal Stern and yell at Tom.
Right.
Or, you know, get Luciana and her network involved there. You know, they're kind of on their own. So what do they do?
Well, industry to industry, we've found that innovators are the ones who are succeeding. And so what we do is, say you're a restaurant and you have a staffing need for lunch hour because the rush is going to hit you. That may not be the most opportune time for that employee to go read to their kid's class. But taking those sorts of opportunities and examples of the way businesses are making it work and allowing them to share those with a relevant, you know, mentor or mentee in this case is how we're seeing that kind of take grasp. Because when it comes down to it, when you look at hourly wages and staffing for restaurants are a great example, breakfast, lunch, and dinner shifts. You know, an absentee employee is a huge problem. But what it has to do is understanding your employees' needs on the front end. If you understand you have a single parent and you have that open dialogue about their needs throughout the school year or semester, you can forecast. I know when we call it rocking reader at my kid's school. So I know 3 weeks from now I'll be a rocking reader on a Wednesday. I'm able to have that healthy dialogue with my employer so that they can help me plan that. Maybe I'll take the breakfast shift instead of the lunch. So we're not talking about surprises, you know, oftentimes. Sick children, things of that nature, you can't plan that. But many of these practices can be, through a healthy dialogue, planned in advance that helps that shift employer manage his workforce.
And Luciana, is that part of the thing too, the counseling of parents that, hey, you know, we don't give your employer any unpleasant surprises. Try to give them as much advance notice as possible if you do have to do something with mom or the kids or whatever.
Yes, even though my job is flexible and I kind of plan my schedule, I still respect my director and let her know when I have something coming up. I think it's like a credit card. If you know you're going to be late or you know you're having problems in advance, you know, just talk with them about it. And I think they respect that more than anything. And just don't misuse it, you know. Just let them know I'm a very involved parent and grandparent, and so a lot of times I do let my boss know ahead of time, like the trip that was Friday. I let her know that way. When I found out, I let them know, and so I think that's important.
And try to develop win-win mm-hmm. scenarios that,
yes.
Okay, I'm going to take this little time off, but don't worry, I'm going to do some additional stuff here to kind of make up for it.
And that's what I did on the bus when I got Wi-Fi. I was typing. Doing homework with him, you know, multitasking, you know, that's what I was doing. So I think it's ways around things. We just have to be strategic about it and have that balance and work with our employers, because I think the more that we show them that we care about the organization as well as our family, they'll be more acceptable to working with us as well.
And Dustin Daniels, isn't that part of the point here of the summit, actually, where you can get that kind of networking and interaction where, well, how do you do it? Well, I do it this way. Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe mm-hmm. that.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously the summit is always the crescendo of Family First Week, right? It really is, again, just building the tent of diverse leaders, individuals, people who maybe don't intersect with these issues that we want to bring under the tent. But we also have a whole week of events, right? Tom will be at the helm of an event that obviously focuses specifically on family-friendly workplaces at Proof, where we essentially have those collaboration moments between businesses. We also, as was mentioned by Morgan on Facebook, which we appreciate, we have a provider-to-provider conference, which really focuses more on strengthening the continuum of care, right? So when a family is dealing with an issue and comes through the doors of the Early Learning Coalition, seldomly are they ever dealing with just one issue. It could be an affordable housing issue. It could be an employment issue. And so making sure the continuum of care among the provider organizations, that those folks know each other, that those folks actually have the skills and the knowledge necessary to make sure that they are all working together to address those needs. So we have a couple of events that all kind of speak to the, you know, it's sort of different intersection of this issue. And, you know, obviously at any one of those folks who are interested in attending, we really, really recommend it, because you never know, again, what kind of collaboration moments you might have. You may have two businesses that meet and they're dealing with a similar challenge, and they can share notes and come up with, you know, maybe some better ideas of how to do it.
The rumor on the street is that this is a very affordable ticket too, right?
It is a very affordable ticket. That's right. It's free 99, which is always the right price. Free 99.
And to find out more again, you can go to a multitude of websites for folks who are just joining us right now to find out more about the week's activities and also what's going on at the summit.
Absolutely. Please, you can come on Facebook, City of Tallahassee, or Office of the Mayor of the City of Tallahassee. You can also go to any of our partner organizations, the Early Learning Coalition, Whole Child Leon. All of us are really kind of just shouting from the rooftops that this is happening, and we want you involved.
Tom Dorzepolsky, you'd mentioned the advantages to the employer when it comes to having these sorts of policies and protocols. And sometimes not. It's just, hey, we play it by ear and whatever seems to work. But what kind of feedback do you get from your people, and how competitive does that make you in a town that probably has more marketing and communications people per square foot than just about any place else in Florida?
Well, we have, our people are our product. I mean, the design ideas that come out of their brains and their skill sets as communication professionals, it's them. And so when you have a really good team, other people pay attention and try and, you know, maybe recruit your employees away. And we face that like a lot of businesses do, but they don't leave. I mean, it's just that simple. And they'll often come and tell me, you know, I got a call from such and such, but, you know, I want to stay with you guys, or it'll kind of make it up the chain of command to me. And to me, that's, again, it's just the halo effect. I didn't know that was ever going to happen. I didn't understand we were being competitive. I thought we were doing the right thing. But it sure is certainly sure is a nice surprise. The call I get most of the time from people outside of the company when they hear about some of our practices, where are some good ideas on this? And the website familyfriendlytlh.org has some basic information, but it also houses our survey. And you can go on I know the business community pays a lot of attention to the show. You can go on to familyfriendlytlh.org and take the survey very discreetly. You don't have to complete it. You can look at the questions. We don't share those answers with anybody. You know, we don't post your score. If you qualify for recognition, you have an opportunity to be recognized. If you don't, no one knows. But I love the idea that people go in and look at that survey and maybe kind of see some things that, I might be able to do this or that for my folks.
What are some of the things that are on the survey, Tom?
Baseline, what industry do you work in? How many employees do you have? How long have you been in business? But outside of that, do you offer flexible scheduling, paid time off, paid sick leave, maternity and paternity leaves? Do you have a lactation room for new moms? Policies regarding domestic violence, as an example. And as I go through some of these questions, domestic violence, there are so many ways a family unit could be attacked or be pressured. And so, you know, the highest level of practice would be a business that recognizes these many pressures or threats to a family and provides support for those mental health, wellness programs, memberships to fitness centers, those types of activities. Bowstern, we do pretty good, but we don't do all those things. We don't have all of those in place. Some of them are not germane to our workforce, but it is certainly eye-opening to take a look at all the many ways you could take care of your people.
Yeah, my daughter just got a job with an employer in Atlanta, and they provide lunch. They have a beautiful spread within the organization. It's kind of like down at Domi Station. If anyone has visited that, they have a little bar buffet. Oh, yes.
They never want you to leave. Just keep working.
Just keep working. There. But lunch is on the company every single day, and it's all organic and healthy and that kind of thing.
Well, at Bowstern, you can get a really bad cup of coffee. We can improve in that area for sure.
Mine's worse. It's down the hall. We'll check it out in a few minutes, Tom.
Oh, man.
And final thoughts here, guys. We're rapidly bearing down on time. Dustin Daniels, any last thought?
Earlier, Tom, you mentioned, you know, just sort of what we use, I think, as the metrics of success for Family First. And I got to tell you, there's a number of things that have taken place in this community since we launched Family First Week and the Family First Initiative that I think we're really excited about, because they really are moving the needle for families. Everything from the Early Learning Coalition's Quality Rating and Improvement System, right? Actually rating and providing resources to early childhood education providers about what quality looks like for the young kids coming through their doors. Obviously, the work that we're doing with the business community and the getting employers to ask themselves, just even ask themselves the question about how they could be more family focused and more family friendly. And then obviously the conversations that we have been seeing take place about essentially whether the resources are available for the issues that children and family are facing in this community, right? I mean, we have implicitly or explicitly discussed, you know, issues like a children's services council, issues like social impact bonds and pay for success, and just really getting innovative in how we are creating the resources that we need to really lean on these issues in a really big way. And so for me, I think those are the metrics of success for this initiative. There's still a whole lot more work to do, and that's why we invite all of the community to continue to work with us on this.
Looks like you get the last word on that one, Dustin. But Luciana Brown and Tom Dierzepolsky, thank you so much for being part of this.
Thanks for having us.
Special perspectives here on our Family First Focus here on WFSU FM and for FSU. Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. We had Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls working the backboard today, along with our gang from WFSU TV, Suzanne Smith, Paul Dam, Brandy Staney, Elena Sims, and Shannon McDowell. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, the legendary Ronald J. Eben shares his radio stories from about six decades in the business. You'll want to tune in next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.